This is CliffCentral.com.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye-Gold, a proudly South African mining company.
At Sibanye-Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye-Gold, we are one.
All right, Leadership Masterclass. I'm Adrian Groenewald, Alison Yandu, and our very special guest, Advocate Thuli Madonsela. Welcome, Advocate.
Thank you for this opportunity, Adrian, and good afternoon to your team and to the listeners.
You can see we love you. We've just kind of, what's the right word, surrounded you with community leaders and executives and managers, and they all want a piece of our public protectors. It's wonderful to have you with us. You're certainly, for me, it's an honor. We can't, as interviewers, really say who some of our favorite leaders are, but I'll admit today that you are one of my favorite leaders in our society, and I'm grateful for you. Also on the panel, we've got Thabisile Phumo. She's a senior vice president at Sibanye-Gold. Hi, Thabisile.
Hi, thank you for having me on the show.
You've been here before, so it's good to have some experience in the studio. And then community leader Toko Morolo. She's the executive manager, community services, Western Area Municipality. So one of the communities in which Sibanye's mine functions. So welcome to you, Toki.
Thank you very much. I'm really humbled to be here.
Good to have you. And we have two other community leaders also in the studio, as well as a live audience of Sibanye managers outside in the hub. And in the studio on the couch is Lucky Motlabane and Faro Fikile, a councillor, also, I guess, at Western Area Municipality. So welcome, everyone. Just a quick reminder before we get going. Last week, we had another wonderful woman leader in the studio, Elsabe Donovan, the founder of Open Window Institute, a university. She started art classes in her garage and grew it into a private university. We spoke about whether the awakening of the artist inside someone can, in fact, improve their leadership capability. And that was interesting. We learned a lot there, so you can download that podcast. All right. Public protector. Good to have you in the studio. I'm going to share just 1 minute, just a thought, and it's based on a tweet that I sent that I know you're aware of a short while ago. I tweeted something to the effect of, in this world, people like you are envied, and that's not always a good thing. So let me expand, and then I'll throw a question at you, and we'll open the discussion that way. In my view, if I had to summarize you, and I cannot find all the words, I'd say you're gracious, you're kind, you're strong, you radiate integrity. You are loved. We'll get to the hated part as well. You can't only be hated in this world, but you are loved, respected. You are real. You are authentic and much more. People like you, especially in positions of influence, are truly few and far between in today's world because position and power corrupts. We know that. They are often envied by those that would actually want to be like them. Just my view. But they can't because they are caught up in themselves, often in a downward spiral of selfish enrichment and wanting to please others, perhaps, or wealth creation, or unethical moral behavior, and so on and so forth. So because they don't have the courage to change and become like someone like our public protector, guess what happens? They choose to envy and destroy. And this is not easy for leaders. However, I also said in my tweet, and of course one only have like 140 characters, because of you and because of who you are and because of some of these attributes that I shared now, you also have the character and ability to get through this successfully and grow from it, become stronger. And while this should convert those that are envious, and it does some, their hearts often grow harder instead. But someone like you keep walking down the right path courageously. You just keep walking down that path, no matter what the opposition, no matter what the resistance and the challenges are. My first question is, how do you do this? How do you, despite insurmountable opposition and resistance from the highest echelons in society, how do you just keep going down that path? I think that there's a spiritual base that gives you strength, but it may not be all. Tell us a little bit more about how you cope, how you deal with this.
Firstly, thank you for that very gracious take on my life. But from where I'm sitting, firstly, I wouldn't say that I'm the epitome of right doing. The label I would claim would be one of authentically trying to do what I consider to be right. Whether it's right or it's not right, I just try to be in integrity with my own values and in integrity with what I consider to be right. Dealing with other people, I've always used my understanding that everyone is doing the best they can.
That's your assumption. You function from that assumption.
Honestly, that everyone is doing the best they can, and if they knew better, they would do better. Yes, they feel threatened. At times, people do certain things because they feel threatened. And when you're threatened, you do whatever you think would improve your fortunes. And in the case, they take a win-lose approach as opposed to a win-win approach. I do try in my life as much as possible to operate from the basis that nobody has to lose for me to win. And there's a lot that we can achieve through a win-win approach. And lastly, to say, yes, there's a spiritual grounding to everything that I do. I believe that my life has a purpose. I also believe that even when people do things that I consider hurtful and sometimes ridiculous, there's a reason why my higher power has decided that those people should come into my life, and I am meant to use that experience to get better as a human being and as a leader.
So do you kind of mentioned some there, I think, but do you have certain mantras, certain principles, and that's what you shared with us, that also inspire you or motivate you? Quotes, mantras, that's the word, is it? And by the way, before I continue, I asked quite a few people to share some thoughts and questions that they would like to pose if they had the opportunity to sit in front of you. So some of my questions, I'll try and remember which those are, don't even come from me, but come from influencers in society. Those are the people I asked to share some questions. But this is one someone said, key mantras that provide you with strength.
Do what you have to do in order to earn the space to do what you would like to do. And never assume that whatever the next person is doing, they are out to get you. They're just doing the best they can.
Coming back to that principle. So that's the answer to that question. Are you motivated by vision or purpose? I mean, you did say you believe your life has a purpose, and some people seem to be motivated by daily purpose. I wake up and I want to make a difference in the world. Others are motivated by a vision. I want to become the CEO or the president of the country or run my own business. Which motivates you, or both? You seem very purpose-driven.
It's both, but mostly purpose-driven. And in that, firstly, I believe my own life has a purpose, and nobody in this world is an accident. Everyone has a purpose, but often we're too overwhelmed by what's happening around us at any given time that we can't make sense of. What can we do with that particular situation to make a difference? And I do, yes, I am also motivated by a vision. I have a vision of the world. I have a sense of what is the best world where we could all live peacefully regardless of our differences in terms of race, gender, ethnicity, etc. And I have a sense that ideal world is a world where there's peace, but that peace is based on mutual respect, affirming each other's ubuntu, and a world where opportunities are equalized and nobody is destitute or desperate.
We kind of call it an empowered society here. We want to transform towards that, where people are empowered. And you know, the difficult thing is, even all organizations often start out like that, don't they? What you say sounds very much like what the ANC says. You know, they want a better life for all. And you'd go to the DA, you'd go to corporates, you'd go to all kinds of organizations. And ultimately, we all want this world that you speak of.
I think the difference, and I'm not talking about the ANC, but I'm just talking about the difference between people who aim to make a difference and people who make a difference is systems thinking. And it's also, systems thinking is about always understanding the impact of my actions on the goal I'm trying to achieve. Because if I'm thinking transactionally, I could do things that are sabotaging my world. And also understanding the interconnectedness of life.
Yeah.
That if I engage in a transaction that is harmful, but I think I'm solving a small problem here, I have to understand that that transaction that looks localized has impact on life as a system. The one of the principles that I like is from Stephen Covey says, always begin with the end in mind. Early in my life, I edited a bit and said, always begin with the end in mind and stay with the end in mind throughout the process.
I often refer to that as the big picture. So leaders have to see the big picture.
Yes.
And not just deal transactionally with a small picture every day. But that can be difficult. Eh? My impression is that you somehow manage to stay true to that big picture. You have to, in the kind of pressure you're under. And let's get there in a moment. I have a question, then I want to just bring the panel in for a moment here. And that is, did you actually start out your career wanting to become a, for lack of a better term, leader, as opposed to a legal practitioner, expert, a law person? I mean, that's what you studied. Did you ever think you're going to become a leader per se, influence thousands, millions?
No, not at all. I think in my upbringing as a lawyer and as a professional, the whole question of leadership is not something that was in my day-to-day practice. But I think in my early 30s, I started then thinking about leadership, and I was exposed to the notion that leadership is not about having a position. It's about influencing people towards a particular shared goal. And of course, then if I have a vision of life, but I don't wake up or do things from the point of view of a leader. It's always a professional decision to say, what am I required to do? Let's, for example, as a power protector, is there a fact that we need to find? Is there a decision we have to make about whether the facts disclose proper conduct or improper conduct? And how are we going to remedy the situation? It's always transactional, but transactional based on how we see our purpose as a team, how we see the purpose of the institution, and ultimately, what kind of world are we contributing towards?
Okay, so I just want to hear from the panel here, and Tuli, you can obviously jump in here. Toki and Tabasili and Alice. So here's someone who started out her career wanting to be a legal practitioner, an expert. You did explain that it evolved, but yet she became a leader who's influencing millions. What resulted in that? It often happens with a lot of people. What caused that to happen? That she went out to study legal law, and yes, she is today influencing millions. What fell in place? What happened? Alice, your thought?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Ajahn, because I also love the way the public protector has dealt with this question. And it often amazes me, and I think we've spoken about this in the past, that it often is the case that if you're a leader, it's not necessarily you who kind of bestows to yourself that title.
Some people do, of course. You know, your Donald Trumps and so on.
For all reasons.
But,
of course.
Yeah.
But often it's the circumstances around through which you find yourself that then determine how people view you and then bestow that mantle of a leader. But
yeah.
Often the case, you would not go around saying, I'm the leader. Of course, if you are humble enough and you've got integrity and you have purpose.
Okay.
Actually, just to add to that, we once organized a leadership conference for women. I think it was 1999. And we had Mujanku Gumbi as one of the speakers. And that, I think, those were the early years where leadership training became very famous. And she came there and she said to us, if you think you're a leader, look behind you. Do you see anyone following? If nobody is, you're not a leader. And she also said that leadership is like being a lady. If you have to tell people that you are a lady, you probably are not.
Yeah, and I know that stuck with you. We've got an interesting world, though, where this word followers have changed. You've got a Gareth Cliff who's got 1.3 million followers, And even before he started Cliff Central and had no staff technically reporting to him, he was a serious influencer. So I guess you've got formal and informal followers. In today's world, especially with social media, formal, informal influencers. Okay, Tabasile, your comment on how did it happen? What pieces fell in place for the public protector to become a leader, even though she just wanted to be a legal practitioner in the beginning?
Look, I think she summed it up nicely. She lived her life understanding that her individual contribution is actually serving the whole. And that in itself means she understands that what she does not only impact upon her. I mean, she beautifully summed up how she views the world in general. And that by design tells me that the pieces didn't have to fall in place. Her philosophy is what fell in place, and it began to align with who she is, with how she does her day-to-day job. What I'm really, really pleased about in South Africa in particular, being a woman where, black for that matter, where the challenges, just even before you become a lawyer, insurmountable, is how she's been able to just navigate through that gracefully, understanding that it's about the contribution and not about the gender. That actually makes a big difference.
Yeah, the advocate here seems to rise above, and that's what Nelson Mandela did, rose above ordinary differences that often create a chasm between us. Why? Because there was a big picture, I think. It's attaching yourself to your values and your principles and then the big picture. Toki?
For me, I guess, you know, what is key in terms of, you know, what has also been said, it's about, you know, being driven by passion and purpose in terms of what you do. Because if you have those qualities, you know, where you want to make the best of whatever area or situation that you are entrusted with as an individual, people realize something in you. But it's also about, you know, always wanting to go, you know, further than the rest, going an extra mile, you know, not just doing an average work. You know, always doing your best, that whatever comes out of that is something that will add value. Not just value to the people that you're working with, but also, you know, move whatever, you know, a institution or whatever area that you are part of, you are able to, you know, move, be part of those people that are moving.
Yeah.
And in such a way, people recognize that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was hearing in terms of, you know, when you were introducing this, where Sibanye says, you know, sometimes, you know, when you look at leadership, leadership is, you know, a maid. But for me, I also believe that, you know, some people are born with those traits. And with a conducive environment, an environment that allows you,
that's where the
maid
comes
to be able to express yourself in terms of your God-given talents, but also in terms of, you know, whatever purpose that you have been placed on this planet Earth to do, you'll be able, you know, to come out and show those talents that God has bestowed upon you.
And so that's where you are made then. You need the environment, you need something to the catalyst, the
definitely
crucible.
Yes.
Yeah, correct. Okay, Public Protector, a question that someone asked, and I think you've answered it kind of, but let's see if you need to bring in something else. You've been vilified, attacked, and smeared by people you regarded as comrades. How have you managed to keep your head straight and focus on the job at hand? I think partly you've answered it with your principles that you believe in your life. And then the question was, what are the three biggest leadership lessons you've learned from this? So may I just add to that? Is there anything you need to add from what you've said? Three biggest leadership lessons are what I'm really interested in. Some of it you've mentioned. But have you learned anything else since you've gone through this, what do we call crucible? I mean, crucible comes up again over the last few years.
Well, let me just start with the how do I deal with the people who insult me. The first thing is really to acknowledge that it's painful. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't acknowledge that it's painful, it can come back and you hurt somebody else other than the one who has hurt you. The second thing is then to forgive that person. So it's not that I don't acknowledge that it's hurting. I acknowledge and then I forgive the person. And that's where the principle of saying, well, this person is doing the best they can, and they, if when they know better, they'll do better. It's about managing the gap between what the person does or says and then trying to respond afterwards, after processing it. The leadership lessons, the first one that I have learned personally is that leadership starts at home. Yes, we seek not to lead, we seek to be significant. But the main leadership lessons you will have will be learned by being a parent, because leading your children is the most important task, but the most trying task. And the second leadership lesson I've learned is that if you now have positional leadership, seek always to understand before you push for being understood. Because when you get people and you insist on a particular way of living life, before you get to understand why are they insisting on a particular approach, there's a clash of worlds. It helps to firstly get a sense of why do they say what they say or do what they say. What's their worldview? What are the outcomes they seek? Then you move them to your world. And linked to that is this, the last issue is always try to hear what is not being said. Again, I'm talking here with primarily positional leadership or even parental leadership, is that there are things that are never said, but because they're not said, it doesn't mean they're not being said silently, and you need to be perceptive and you need to see what's the impact of your life or of the things you do or don't do on other people. Because regardless of what you ask of fellow human beings, they will start doing things based on how you interact with them as opposed to what you tell them to do.
So I'd love to hear from our panel their thoughts on the leadership lessons you've learned. But in a very visible leadership position, and in a society where top leaders often choose to communicate via the media, they actually don't even give you an audience. They just communicate through their PR or through newspapers, all their contacts, their thoughts and feelings. And we seem to see a lot of that going back and forth. And you just think, come on, flipping President Zuma and Julius Malema, speaking years back, just get together in one room and have a good conversation and seek to understand. We don't have enough of that. A lot of communication is key. And it happens through media. So that makes those principles difficult, I guess, in your position. You would say, listen, I'd like to come see you because I want to seek to understand. I want to understand what's behind the scenes here. No, I'm not going to see you. I'm going to communicate through the Sunday Times.
But that's where we use, I think when we're in positional leadership, we use too much of our hard power. And that's the kind of training I also inculcate in my team, is that we have a lot of power. And now that the Constitution has affirmed our power, we have even more power.
Yeah.
However, you have a duty to use more of your soft power. Now that you have significant power, you actually shouldn't use it unless absolutely necessary. You've got to use soft power, which is really about engaging and getting people to understand this worldview that you're trying to generate in the world. Because even if you move out, then people proceed with that worldview regardless of your absence.
Hard power, soft power, that's nicely put, and that's what you have a lot of. And that's why we need people who are in powerful positions to have soft power. It's almost power without title. You would still have that power if you didn't have title and position. Okay, we're going to go to a question. Before we do that, very quickly, Alice Tabasile and Toki, very brief comments on those leadership principles that she's learned, if you want to comment. Alice?
Yeah, I quite like the fact that Public Protect talks about us seeking to be significant rather than to lead. Because leading, again, arises out of the circumstances and the crucible that you find yourself in. So, I mean, maybe just as a shout out to the Public Protector, I think she embodies true excellence, because I can just only imagine the impact of what she's saying to a young, you know, person growing up, especially young girls, you know, who have so much to look up to in terms of what she embodies. I think we're grateful for that.
Yeah, thank you, Alice.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
No, I must just say I'm schooled. Thank you so much, Public Protector. And I hope every young girl listening out there would really begin to embrace some of the principles you've shared with us today.
Those are powerful principles so far. Toki, anything you want to add?
Yeah, in terms of what she said, that sometimes you need to know why things are being said. But not only that, you know, I think also very significant, you know, and that I have learned in my career as a social worker, as part of my training, that you listen with 5 ears. Listen to what is being said, how it is being said, why it is being said, when it is being said, you know, and
context as well then.
Context. And for me, you know, you will be able, you know, to even understand people in spite of them being very negative to you. And I think, you know, listening to what she's saying, it's about, you know, acknowledging. For me also, I found that a public protect, that it's hurting, you know, you need to express that. But at the end, you know, I always say, maybe spirituality, that you know what, nobody's perfect. But also, you know what, all these people, as she said, are trying to do their best, you know, the way they can. And in the long run, as a leader, you tend to move, you know, and be able to forgive when you understand that, you know what, in any relationship, it's a complex situation. Leadership, it's even worse. You are in the spotlight. People are looking at you. But, hey, you know, it's not personal.
That was, over and above the three principles, All that formed part of it, the maturity to admit and recognize that it hurts. I mean, that's emotional intelligence, probably. Mm-hmm. And then forgive, yes. Another emotional intelligence component, very important. And that's probably also a spiritual intelligence component that forms part of the makeup of a leader. Advocate, can we take a question from the floor? We might take a break and then come back to the answer, giving you 30 seconds to answer. Let's take the question quickly. Introduce your name and then go for it.
Advocate, hello. I'm Shireen. I'm the Leadership Development Manager for Sibanye, and we're so excited to have you with us here today. My question is, what has been a defining moment for you that has shaped you into the leader that you are? And there might have been several moments. Has there been a point where you've learned a lesson or something that has evolved you into the leader that you are? Thank you.
Okay, so you've got 30 seconds to think of that. It'll be a great answer. Stay with us. We're continuing with the public protector, Advocate Thuli Madonsela, on Leadership Platform, or our Leadership Transformation Platform. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.